music by Igor Stravinsky from his ballet called Petrushka, and this is one of his own arrangements for piano from three movements that he made from that ballet, the Danse Russe, the Russian dance, performed in a new recording by Roman Rabinovich, who is on tour currently with the Haifa Symphony Orchestra of Israel on their first ever tour of the United States, matter of fact. And they're coming to the Krannert Center in Urbana for performance on Saturday. He'll be playing music by Tchaikovsky, and as the orchestra plays some music by Weber and Dvorak. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Do you have a long association with the Haifa Symphony?
Yes, I first played with them when I was a kid. I was about 10 years old or so. We've collaborated regularly since and developed a very good working relationship.
This recording, from which we sampled just a bit and we'll be hearing more from very shortly, is called Ballet Russe, reference to that particular Russian company that was particularly prominent in France. Talk a little bit about why you made a decision to record these particular pieces, Prokofiev, Ravel, and Stravinsky.
I came to this through painting, actually. I also paint, and I love painting. And when I was a kid, I had a beautiful book by Leon Bakst, who was a Russian painter who did decorations for the Ballet Russe productions. And I was fascinated by this book. And I didn't know the music so well at the time of the ballets, so I started listening to it through Bakst, through painting, and I've loved Petrushka from the very first time I heard it as a kid, and I always wanted to play it, and so playing it, and later I learned Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev, and I knew I wanted to make a recording with these two pieces, and I started looking for the closing trio, and I went back to Bakst, and I looked at the book, and I saw that he also made decorations for Daphne and Chloe by Ravel, and something clicked, and I just wanted to play this music. So the problem was that there is no transcription for the piano, as it is a wonderful orchestral score for the ballet, absolutely gorgeous orchestration. And I decided to make a transcription of my own, and it was really fun. And I think it works very well for the piano.
I was reading a bit of your notes to this particular recording, and also enjoying, for that matter, the drawings that illustrate the booklet. And you do make reference to some sort of piano sketch that Ravel made of some portion of the ballet, but said it wasn't actually, didn't appear to be for public performance.
Yes, he made a rehearsal reduction. It's very bare and not very pianistic. So I looked at it, and together with the orchestra score, I made something of my own.
Well, let's hear a sample from it. This is the second of the two movements you transcribed, and this is essentially the very end of the ballet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is the last two movements of the second orchestral suite, or the end of the ballet.
Okay, well, we'll hear the second of those two movements. It's just a general dance, as it says here, from Daphnis and Chloe by Maurice Ravel. The pianist playing it, Roman Rabinovich, also made the transcription from, of course, Ravel's orchestral original. He's going to be performing with the Haifa Symphony on Saturday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Music by Tchaikovsky. More on that in a moment here on Live and Local.
Thank you.
That's the final music from the ballet Daphnis and Chloe by Maurice Ravel, in transcription by the pianist in this recording, Roman Rabinovich, who's my guest here on Live and Local today. He's going to be playing with the Haifa Symphony Saturday in Urbana. The Tchaikovsky Concerto, the first of the Tchaikovsky Concertos, is what you're going to be playing with the Haifa Symphony. Was this something that the orchestra asked you to play on this particular tour, or did you decide this concerto?
Well, I gave them a list of my repertoire, and they chose four, actually. I'm playing four different concertos. In addition to Tchaikovsky, I'm doing Beethoven 3, and Rachmaninoff 2, and Rachmaninoff 3 as well. So it's quite a bit of repertoire.
A lot of playing, and of course, some really big, very well-known concertos.
Yes.
Do you, by any chance, do, as part of the concert, any of your transcriptions, you know, as an encore, as just a solo piece?
You know, sometimes. I'm actually, so far we did about 12 concerts already, and I played a different encore for every concert. So I might play some of the Daphnis at some point, yes, definitely.
Not to give anything away as to what might happen or might not happen in Urbana, I wanted to ask you a bit about the artwork you referenced. I enjoyed looking at everything that's on display in your website, and we'll remind people that you can have a look yourself at his website, which is romanrabinovich.net, and that's spelled R-A-B-I-N-O-V-I-C-H. There are a few options for how one might spell it. When did you start painting?
When I was 10 or so, and I've always loved it. I never studied it formally, but I've been very serious about it. It's definitely more than just a hobby.
Well, evidently so. And would it be fair to say that at least in some of your work, you've got some influence of Picasso?
Oh, yeah. Picasso's in... Well, it's hard not to be influenced by Picasso. He's such a... sort of overwhelming personality that you have to come to terms with it, with him. You know, it's probably like Beethoven in music. You know, you have to face him.
And you also are not only doing traditional painting, but also doing drawing, and I guess you could call it painting, on your phone, on your iPad.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different? I mean, aside from just technically different, you know, you use what... electronic means instead of actual paintbrush, but how otherwise is that different for you creatively? How do the paintings turn out differently?
Well, it's different because it's a projection. It's based on light, so the colors are very vivid, and it's all, as I said, it's all projections. And it's much faster and cleaner than real paint. Of course, you don't have to wait for the paint to dry and so forth. You can apply as many textures without end, really. I mean, you can put as many layers to it as you wish. And of course, there is a limit to what you can do on a piece of paper.
I imagine there are some things that you can do on the computer that you can't do with painting, as you're suggesting, but also probably the other way around, isn't it?
Oh yes, of course. Yeah, I you know, it doesn't replace real painting, of course. I mean, no way. But it's just a different medium and. Very important one, I think.
Has that by any chance come out at all from touring as a pianist, where it's more difficult to bring paint and canvas?
Yes, absolutely.
Have you, I read that you have done some displays of your artwork in conjunction with some of your performances. Mm-hmm. Have you ever actually integrated them at all?
Well, I did, I played pictures at an exhibition with some of my paintings based on the piece. So yes, I'm looking for ways to combine the two.
I would think that would be potentially very appealing to presenters.
Yes, I think so too.
Because it seems that whether audiences are demanding it or not, presenters are at least perceiving that audiences would like to see more visual elements to
I would hope so.
You would hope so?
Yes.
In order to take advantage of your paintings, or because you think that overall that's a good part of a concert experience to have visuals?
No, I think it's just an exciting way to explore creatively.
Well, speaking of visuals, of course, ballet music is ballet is at least more than half a visual idiom. When you are performing excerpts from ballet, of course, there is nothing visual other than yourself at the piano, unless you're illustrating it somehow. When you're playing, for example, music from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, do you have in mind the ballet itself?
Oh, sure, yes, of course. I mean, I have the ballet. I have, you know, I looked at the, I mean, I went to ballet to see it, and I saw a few productions. And, of course, the sound of the orchestra is in my head. But I'm not trying to mimic it, but it's there. And I'm influenced by it. Of course, yes.
Have you ever danced at all yourself, just out of curiosity?
I'm a terrible dancer. Yes.
Well, I ask partly because the way you perform, the way you play many of these is to me, very dance-like. I've heard other people do some of these where it sounds like they're being more pianistic. Purely for the sake of the piano, mm-hmm. sounds you can make with the piano, rather than recreating the dance.
Well, thank you. I mean, it has to come from the character of the characters of, you know, of Shakespeare, and of course the dance quality of it is very important.
Well, I wanted to leave people with three of the movements from these 10 pieces for piano by Prokofiev, which in this case he arranged these himself, mm-hmm. from the orchestral original from Romeo and Juliet. It's from Roman Rabinovich's new CD, which is called Ballet Russe, which also has music by Stravinsky and his own arrangements of music by Ravel. And he's going to be performing with the Haifa Symphony Orchestra, the Tchaikovsky First Piano Concerto, on Saturday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. The orchestra's on its first American tour. And it's been a pleasure to have you on Live and Local today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Those are three pieces from Sergei Prokofiev's ballet Romeo and Juliet. His own arrangements for piano. We heard a folk dance and one called The Street Awakens, and then the one representing the character of Mercutio, all performed by pianist Roman Rabinovich, who will perform with the Haifa Symphony Orchestra of Israel Saturday night at 7:30 at the Kranert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. The concert will be conducted by Haifa Symphony's principal guest conductor, Bohuslav Davidov, and Mr. Rabinovich will play with them Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Support for our broadcast today comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products for hospitals and patients throughout our region. Blood donations help save the lives of the injured and critically ill. Information is available at bloodservices.org. That's the second of a set of eight pieces for viola, clarinet, and piano by Max Bruch, and performed here in a live concert performance at Coolidge Auditorium at the Library of Congress in February of 1967 by clarinetist Harold Wright, who at the time was principal clarinet of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. In fact, that was a few years before he took over that job, come to think of it, with violist Boris Kreut and pianist Murray Pariah. All eight of those pieces will be played live in concert tomorrow night by University of Illinois faculty clarinetist J. David Harris and faculty violist Rudolf Hocken, or to be more precise for the purpose of this concert, the five-string viola, and pianist Alexander Zolotarev. It's going to be in Smith Memorial Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Starts at 7:30, and it is, as they always are, at that hall, a free program. Great chance to hear some really fine players. And as it happens, we have both violist and pianist with us here live in the studio to preview One of the other pieces. There are two quite interesting and unusual pieces on that program. So, Mr. Hawken, Mr. Zolotar, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you like that I called you Mr. Rudolph?
Yeah, that's better than Ms. or
number of other things.
Yeah,
it should be, in case smart alecky things get said here,
yes.
It should be known that Rudolph and I have known each other for a while.
Yes.
And so we'll try to keep that at a minimum. At least I will, in any event. First of all, introduce your pianist. He's not from these parts.
No, yeah, this is Alexander Zolotarev, and he lives in Cologne in Germany, where he teaches at the Music Conservatory. And we met in near Cologne, actually, at the University of Siegen. I was playing a recital of new music there, and we played two of tomorrow night's pieces there together last May, and he's originally from St. Petersburg. So, Alexander, I'll let you continue.
Introduce myself. I came from Cologne, and we play tomorrow night the 13 pieces by Boris Kozak, the Ukrainian composer who moved to Cologne 20 years ago from Ukraine. And this 13 piece composed for the different kinds of food. So you, with every piece, you can enjoy the different kind of food written in French. It should be very enjoyable, I hope, for the audience.
So you say you can enjoy different kinds of food. Does that mean you're inviting audiences to bring food like they, you know, and other props like they do for the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
That could be.
In which case they would need instructions as to what to bring.
Yeah. Well, there. I guess I'll post all the different spices online that this piece describes.
So and they can you bring have all a those. Facebook page for the recital.
Yeah, a scratch and sniff card, perhaps.
But something. This is give the name of the piece and what's the gist of it? I mean, it's sort of a bunch of puns and so on.
Yes. So they all the titles here are French, and all the titles of the movements are French, as well as the title of the whole piece. And the entire piece is called Bagatelle Essentielle. And that's kind of a pun on the word essential, with the word essential containing the word scent, which was spelled the same way in French as in English. So it's kind of based on the sense of smell and sense of taste and... so each piece is has a title that's sort of a French play on words on the name of a famous composer or a famous piece of music. For example, the first one we're going to play is called Camille de Saint-Saëns. Now, of course, the composer is Saint-Saëns. Sorry, my French pronunciation is pretty bad. I can pronounce Max Bruch, but I can't really pronounce French names too well. But in any case... The name Saint-Saëns, it begins with S-A-I-N-T, and here it's spelled S-C-E-N-T.
So Saint-Saëns.
Saint-Saëns, as opposed to Saint-Saëns. I don't know, I'm probably doing all these sort of nasal sounds all wrong anyway, but in case that's how the how these pieces work. And then there's, later on, for example, there's a... Chacon cardamom, and cardamom. Yeah, so it refers to spices and
the chacon. Is that a
chacon is a dance
on a Bach piece, or
yeah, or it's a general dance. Yeah, so it's kind of a folk dance, and so all of these are composed in a way to evoke smells and tastes.
Any evidence from past performances that, from what you've heard from audience members, that they actually do that? Did they people come up to you and say, "Oh, my, you know, I really could smell the cardamom during that particular"?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it can also partly just be because they first read the program notes, and you know that influences them. But I guess we should have to play these pieces without program notes or titles and see how people react, what they think they describe. So do you think they describe smells and tastes?
I think yes. And then the last piece is this carnival, so-called Carnival of Cologne, this kind of Mardi Gras. It's the time everything is goes crazy in the city. It's a big festivals, and you can see the person as a different dressed. It's just really funny.
Mm-hmm. So the food in this case is presumably any number of things that would be eaten in at somebody's carnival.
Yeah.
So a little hard to distinguish there.
Yeah.
Well, I know you have some examples.
Yes.
Of these, will you introduce each one as it comes up? Are we to guess? What the influence is.
I guess I'll...
Since we don't have a program here.
Yes, I guess I'll say each title beforehand, and as long as any actual French people listening aren't upset. Bad pronunciation. So the first one we're going to play is called Camille de Saint-Saëns. Sorry, this is a live performance, but I do need to announce the name of the next piece before we play it. This is called Romarin de Couperin. And, of course, Couperin is a Baroque, early Baroque composer. But his name is misspelled here deliberately. C-O-U-P-E with a dash. And then R-H-I-N, which refers to the word nose, like rhinoceros, for example. So... this is Couperin, kind of arranged as an olfactory piece of music.
Any idea if this is Louis Couperin or François?
Oh.
Or am I testing you unfairly?
It says the musician and composer family in the program notes.
In general. Okay.
In general.
Right.
The,
there's
a
number of them,
the
actually.
Couperin in general, yeah. Next one is Vie de Rose à la Berlioz. So the name is actually spelled correctly. Berlioz, it's just sort of a rhyme. So. Thank you.
do recognize where that came from. The Symphonie Fantastique.
Yeah.
The Ball.
That's right.
Or A Ball, as it's called in the second movement.
And the next one, entitled Miroir à la Ravel. And miroir is the French word for mirror. It's M-I-R-O-I-R, I guess. But here that word is spelled M-Y-R-R-H. Apostrophe O-I-R-S, so mirror, that's a spice.
Oh, as in so, frankincense.
And then, yeah.
Gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Yes, and myrrh,
that's
right.
As we would say it.
Yeah. That's exactly.
So that one based on a piano piece of Ravel.
Yes.
Before you go on to the next one, Alexander, does that, I've heard the piece, but I don't remember. Does the piano part stay at all close to what Ravel wrote?
It's very close to Ravel's style in general. It's not a piece of one piece of Ravel, but it's well, very well styled to Ravel. Just everybody can recognize this music.
Okay.
And the next one is called Chaconne à Cardamome.
So,
As previously mentioned.
Sorry.
How he actually had in mind conveying the sense of spice. I'm trying to.
Yeah, we'd have to
get a reaction. I mean, see if I'm having a reaction here.
Well, we'd have to call him up, but it's almost midnight over there. Yeah, now. I don't know if he'd be available, but you could ask him.
We should remind folks that my guests live in our studio are violist Rudolf Hocken and pianist Alexander Zolotarev. Rudolf's on faculty at the University of Illinois, and Alexander visiting from Cologne, Germany. And this piece by one of your compatriots, former compatriots, right? Ukrainian composer Boris Kozak from his Bagatelles Essentielles, pun on scents and flavors and so on. Do we have another?
Yes. This is the Saffron Sarabande. So Saffron Sarabande.
Sarabande, yeah. Type of French dance of the Baroque era, I think, typically.
Spanish.
Is it Spanish?
Yes.
Really?
Cervantes' original Spanish dance from the Baroque time.
Oh, I need to hold on to that memory now. Maybe I usually see it spelled in the French way.
Yeah, it is spelled here, yeah. French here.
One more?
Yes. This one is called Allemande de la Lavande. Wanted to mention, you probably noticed there were some off-key notes there in the viola part. And before the viola jokes start flying here, that was deliberate.
That
those
was
are
deliberate.
Quarter tones written in the music. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yes. Yeah. For those of you who are not in the classical world, there are many viola jokes, and the violists are the sad butt of these things. Boris Kozak's piece, we had several selections, Bagatelle's Essentiel, and played in our studio by Rudolf Hocken on the five-string viola with pianist Alexander Zolotarev. They'll be playing those pieces and two other sets of pieces on a recital tomorrow night at 7:30 at Smith Memorial Hall in the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Quickly, a word on the last piece, which also has to do with last piece on the program, which also has to do with sense.
Yes,
as such.
The last piece on the program is by David Baker, who's a jazz composer living in Indiana, teaches at Indiana University. And it's part of a jazz suite for violin and piano. It's one movement of that suite. It's called Perfume Perspiration. So the concert begins and closes with sort of music for the nose. But then the middle of the program are the Bruch pieces, which are music for the heart. So we're all covered, basically.
Does David Baker indicate, you know, how it is the music reflects that particular title?
There's I could not find any program notes. And there's just the title.
So this is this is really left to both performers and listeners' imagination.
Yes, exactly.
That's how that comes around. Is it a particularly jazzy piece? We won't have we won't be hearing a sample of it today.
Well, I would say it's, you know, definitely sounds like a very slow jazz piece.
The other thing I'd like you to comment on, our listeners, you know, I said you are playing this five-string viola, and our listeners are, you know, can't see what this actually is. If you're familiar with the viola, you know that it basically is it looks like a larger violin. This one looks like a way larger and much more grotesque in its shape. This is one you had made for you.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about why?
Well, it has a range of a viola and a violin. So here's the viola, and here's the violin. And basically, as a teenager, I always had a big double case on my back with a violin and a viola, and that always struck me as a little bit silly because, you know, they have three strings in common out of four. So much later, I discovered this violin maker, David Ravinas, who built these very experimental instruments, and we started talking about how you could build a really effective combination of a viola and a violin that would really sound good throughout the entire range of both instruments and be easy to play, and so forth. And he had already built a lot of experimental four-string instruments. So it's very asymmetrical, or grotesque, as you thought. But that's a pretty common description of it. So it's 20 inches diagonally, which is an exceptionally large viola. They would normally be somewhere around 16 inches or 17 inches. And so from the perspective of producing a big sound, that's about as big as a viola gets. But then for the player, it's actually a very, very small instrument, like 15 and a half inches, just from the player's neck to the instrument's neck. And also the ribs are very wide on the bass side and very narrow on the treble side and so forth. There are a lot of adjustments made to make this instrument work, sound good, and be easy to play.
So if you'd like to see it and Rudolph and Alexander in action, and also University of Illinois faculty clarinetist J. David Harris, who will be performing with them in the Max Bruch pieces, that's tomorrow night, 7:30. Thanks very much for coming in and giving us a bit of a preview today.
All right. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Sounds like it should be a fun program. Yeah. Our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home, located at the corner of Elm and University in the historic Trevitt Mansion, across from Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Owens Funeral Home, owned and operated by the Owens family since 1925, invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Be back with another show tomorrow from 4 to 5. And quick mention of some other events you can see and hear live. The Parkland Early Jazz Ensemble is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 7 o'clock. The Illinois Modern Ensemble at the University of Illinois will play at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30. Bob Watson and Matt Stewart are playing at the Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6:30. As you heard on yesterday's show, Ladysmith Black Mambazo will be at the Doudna Fine Arts Center at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston tomorrow night at 7:30. And the weekly traditional Irish music session is at Dublin O'Neill's in downtown Champaign. That's tomorrow night starting at 8:30. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks very much for joining us as always. Stay tuned for All Things Considered from NPR in just 20 seconds. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and it is 5 o'clock.